are Sports 56, WHBQ Memphis, and W253 DF Memphis with Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy. Weekday mornings from 7 to 10. Now back to Sports Time on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour brought to you by Landers Ford in Collierville. Here once again are Brett Norsworthy and Bryant Dacus.
Back in to Sports Time. Bryant and Brett with you as we start our second hour on this Thursday afternoon. We got to talk more NBA, and joining us now to do that, it's Keith Smith.
Time to talk NBA with Keith Smith from Spot Rack and the Front Office Show, and on Twitter X at Keith Smith NBA. Here's Keith Smith talking basketball with Bryant and Brett.
Smith joins us now to talk some NBA, and Keith, so much to get to. I certainly want to talk about what happened in the Western Conference Finals with the Spurs eliminating OKC, but I think we got to start with what happened last night in Game 1 of the NBA Finals. The Knicks on the road get a 10-point win. They were trailing by double digits about midway through the third quarter. They're able to storm back. Jalen Brunson was fantastic. What did you make of what you saw last night in Game 1?
Yeah, this is the Knicks, right? They never feel like they're out of a game. They that huge comeback against Cleveland in Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals. A lot of their other games, they've been blowing teams out. They came back a couple times against the Hawks as well in the first round. And there was a moment where it looked like, all right, the Spurs are going to hold serve here, at least in Game 1. But then the Knicks, you know, they just do what they do. And if you can get it to a place where you got the ball in Jalen Brunson's hands late in the fourth quarter to either, you know, hold the team off or finish off a game, you're going to feel pretty good, I think, about your chances to win that one, because he is right up there with the NBA's preeminent closers.
Keith, I know we're all there now, but when did you first get there with the Knicks can win it all this year?
It was a while ago. They were actually my preseason pick to go to the NBA Finals. And I, you know, long held belief of if you're in the finals, you have a chance to win. I don't care who you're playing, much like last year when everybody's like, Pacers are going to get their doors blown off by the Thunder. I just think when you're there, you have a chance. And that's why, you know, why we play the games and all that. So I really feel, you know, like the Knicks have a chance here. And I picked them to win in seven, you know, before the series started. So, but it really firmed up probably when they took care of business against the Sixers with relative ease in the second round. I was like, all right, they're here now. They're not messing around. When they get you down, they're going to keep you down. They're going to put their foot on your throat, and they're going to finish you off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no question about it. And, you know, last night I mentioned Jalen Brunson, 30 points for them. We've heard all the talk from New York Knicks fans of Jalen Brunson, greatest Knick of all time. Man, if he has more performances like that, he will certainly be more in that conversation. But you look around, it was a little bit of everybody last night for this Knicks team. We know well-rested from the last series. Who were you the most impressed with last night from the Knicks?
Yeah, I thought Karl-Anthony Towns played really, really well. I thought his defense against Victor Wembanyama was maybe the biggest surprise we saw in that. After all of the debate of who's going to guard Wembanyama, myself included, you know, we talked about it for a few days of who are the Knicks going to put on him, and it's probably going to be OG Anunoby and Mikal Bridges, and they'll double team and try to do what they can to get the ball out of his hands. All of a sudden, here it is, and it ends up being Karl-Anthony Towns out of the gate, and he held up and did really, really well against Wembanyama as far as making him work. So, you know, absolutely one of the big stars. And Landry Shamet made a bunch of shots off the bench as well. He's just played fantastic also.
Yeah, he had some defensive woes, but he did play well offensively. The big fix for San Antonio going into Game 2, or is it just a couple of tweaks for him?
Yeah, I think they got to get Wemby the ball in better positions, and I think he needs to be more intentional about the way he does things. I'm not saying he wasn't trying, because that's going way too far, but there were times when he was just kind of out there, and it was like, no, man, you have to be the guy when you're on the floor. And I think, you know, what we saw at moments in that game was you kind of knew he was there on the defensive end, but offensively he was just kind of doing his thing a little bit, but not so much. So what I'm excited to see is, can they get him the ball in the mid-post area where he can go to work? If he is going to get it outside, can they really spread and space the floor and make it so that he could take Karl-Anthony Towns off the dribble, force the Knicks to change that matchup and go a different way. That's going to be what I'm looking for on that end.
Yeah. You know, talking more about the Spurs, there's been a lot of talk today about, especially in that fourth quarter, Dylan Harper coming off the bench, had a nice game, but instead they go with the older De'Aaron Fox in the fourth quarter, and some people saying that was the wrong decision, you should have thrown Harper out there. What do you make of that kind of conversation between this veteran and De'Aaron Fox coming off of an injury from last series, and Dylan Harper also had to deal with an injury last series, but him, this young guy, rookie, hadn't really had a super defined role all season, but in the playoffs has been pretty reliable.
Yeah, right. We all have the answers after the game. We all know what should have been done. And my thing is, we have seen this Spurs team in the games where they haven't had De'Aaron Fox or the games where he's been limited. Things can get pretty sideways for them offensively without him on the floor. So I think having him in a place is really, really having him out there is really important because he's the one who settles them down. When everything kind of gets sideways, he's the one who's usually the guy who's like, all right, everybody, calm down. We got this. We're going to go. That said, yeah, Dylan Harper is playing great, and I think, you know, one of the things that they're going to have to do at times, and I think they can get away with it because it's not like the Knicks play these overly big lineups, is go with all three guys out there. Have Fox, Harper, and Castle out there a lot more and just kind of see what that looks like, and it's going to have to be more. Mitch Johnson's probably going to have to coach it by feel, you know, and see where it goes and kind of go there. But after one game, I'm not going to jump too much on him for trusting the veteran to be on the floor.
Mm-mm, definitely not. Obviously, one of the storylines going into the series was Mitchell Robinson and this pinky injury. Only had 13 minutes played last night, 2 points, 6 rebounds for him. How did you think he looked out there, and how do you think he'll be used as he deals with this injury?
Yeah, I thought he looked okay, and I think we can now safely say it's a hand. Like, it's not his pinky. Right. He broke his hand, and, you know, however he did it, he did it, and, you know, they're not going to tell us that story. It doesn't sound like anytime soon. So, you know, we're there with, you know, for him, the big thing is, can he catch the ball, right? A lot of people are like, ah, who cares? He doesn't do anything off the dribble. He's not a shooter. And that's all true, but he needs to be able to catch the ball, whether that's rebounding or off passes, off lobs. Because if you fumble it at all, Wembanyama is just going to be on top of you. And if not him, Luke Kornet's going to be on top of you. So I thought he looked okay. I think there's going to be moments in this series because, hey, let's just say, don't trust Karl-Anthony Towns to play every game without getting himself in foul trouble. I thought he did a really nice job about that last time. But later game one, I don't know that we're going to see that every time forward. So I think we'll see, you know, kind of how that goes. But, yeah, it's going to be going to be a series where we're going to keep an eye on Mitchell Robinson and if he can have an impact when the Knicks need him to.
Keith, last hour, Brian and I were talking about tomorrow night for New York to not too much relax on that house money, that you got the one you really wanted. Don't let up. I wouldn't have a big minutes played toll if you're behind, but it's a chance. If they go up the unthinkable 2-0, then party could be on next week in New York. You got to go for it tomorrow night instead of relaxing and being content, don't you?
Yeah, 100%. You have a few days off in between games, or a couple days because you get the extra day for the travel in between games. So there's no reason not to push it a little. Yeah, you don't need to go into it with, all right, we're going to play everybody, you know, 45 minutes, and that's just it. But, yeah, if you need, like, all right, we got to ask a couple extra minutes of a few guys. Yeah, absolutely. You should do that. So I think we're in a position here where it really is a place where it is, let's get after it. Let's try to get, you know, this 2-0 series lead. And I think a big part of what's been special for the Knicks in this playoff run has been their ability to just, they don't let up. I mean, they're on this historic run now of, you know, games won in a row and by a pretty large margin of victory. So I think we're in a place where, yeah, you just got to kind of let him do his thing and just get after it.
And Keith, I may very well have missed it. Bryant, you may have seen something. I just haven't. Has anybody had on as analyst or even interviewed Jay Wright and his thoughts about all these Villanova guys doing it at this level?
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I mean, part of that is I think he's under contract with one of the TV networks. I don't know which one it is, but that may be an issue as far as doing that. I think that thankfully we have seen it maybe get a little better with those things where they'll share talent some. But yeah, I think I am kind of curious. I it's one of those things where it does feel like it's maybe getting a little overblown, with that, because it's three guys. It's three guys out of an 18-man roster. It's, because they've moved on from DiVincenzo. But, yeah, I mean, it is still a pretty cool story, and it would be cool for those guys to have won one together in college and then get one at the NBA level. Mm-hmm. And maybe they're waiting to bring Jay Wright out a little bit later, when that's more of a possibility.
Yeah, get Jay Wright out there on the championship parade if the Knicks win it, of kind of starting that building block with those guys. Obviously, talking a lot about the NBA Finals after Game 1 last night, but over the weekend we had Game 7 in the Western Conference Finals. The Spurs eliminate OKC. What did you make of that series as a whole and how Game 7 played out?
Yeah, I mean, disappointing for Chet Holmgren to kind of no-show it. Like, they needed him to be there. They needed him to play well, and he just didn't. All that said, hey, people are, they're doing what they do and going into these, huge ideas of like, well, now you got to trade Holmgren and trade Jalen Williams and all this stuff, as if this team wasn't, they're less than a year from winning the title, and they weren't in a Game 7 without Jalen Williams and A.J. Mitchell. I've already talked to people with the Thunder, and they believe, hey, if we had had Williams or Mitchell, we win Game 7. Mm-hmm. We're playing in the finals today. So I don't think they're going to overreact to anything as far as moving out their main guys. I think they're just going to do what they do and get right back after it again next year. I think it's too much to assume they have to change out everybody, because we're just not there mm-hmm. yet.
No, definitely not. Well, what moves do you expect them to make this offseason? Do they need to make moves ahead of next season for money reasons? I'm just not super familiar with where they're at with the different salaries and stuff. What do you expect this offseason from the Thunder?
Yeah, for sure. If they just ran it back, which they certainly could do, they're really, really expensive. So I think they're going to be in a place where what we see them do is just kind of tweak the roster. I think there's a good chance Lou Dort maybe is gone, and maybe one of Aaron Wiggins or Isaiah Joe. They have two first-round picks again, because of course they do, and they've got to figure out how they're going to fit those guys into the roster. So I think there's definitely a lot of work where it's going to be, all right, we got to kind of move some things around, but I don't think it's going to be any one of SGA, Chad, Holmgren, any of that. The bigger guys there, I think they've planned for this. They've had it planned out for how they're going to do this. But I do think there will be some roster changes made. Probably the idea will be, hey, let's bring in a little more shooting and let's bring in one more on-ball playmaker so we don't get stuck in the spot again. And I think they would like a little more front court depth too, because by the end of the season, it was kind of Hartenstein, Holmgren, and that was it. There wasn't a whole lot else left.
Keith, a little bit like the question I asked you about when it hits you the Knicks could win it all. It was Saturday night when it hit me that Oklahoma City's not going to repeat, and I'm still kind of stunned by it. Are you?
Yeah, to an extent, but I mean, I think the Spurs had shown us, that they were there, right? Like they were really, already kind of, on their way, and I think that is where I feel like it is, in a place where it's, I don't want to undersell the Spurs. I think, myself included, we're like, all right, are they going to have to do the stereotypical path of taking their lumps and all that? And I think, where we're at is with the Spurs, is they were so good. And for the Thunder, it just proves it's really, really hard to repeat. I mean, we're 9 years now into no repeat champs. Like, this is, unprecedented territory in the NBA. And I think this is just kind of the new world where, there's a lot of good teams and it's really hard to win back-to-back.
Is that good for the league for it to be shared like this?
Yeah, I think so. I think as long as some of these teams have the kind of holdover connectedness to, all right, they're there, we can kind of rely on them. It's like they always say, you live long enough to see yourself become the villain. And that's where, like the Warriors were. Warriors were like, everybody loved them when they were on the come up. And then when they got there, it was like, get these guys out of here. Somebody's got to beat them. And you're either rooting for them or rooting against them. And I think now we're in a place where what we want to see kind of happening here with the NBA is there are some teams like the Thunder, like the Spurs, they're kind of there every year, but I think it's perfectly fine if everybody kind of goes in with like, hey, why not us? Why can't we have a chance? The Spurs are one of the smallest markets in the league. So with the Thunder, they're two of the best teams in the league and we can go. Then on the flip side, you have the Knicks in the biggest market in the world, and it's like, hey, here they are, and they're getting it done too. So I think it's good to have all kinds of comers.
Going back to the Thunder and kind of this offseason, you talk about the first-round picks for them, and you talk about that front court. Two-part question here. The first one, Thomas Sorber, their first-round pick last year, he sat all year with an injury. What type of role do you see him playing with this team next year? And then who's the type of guy that you could see OKC going after with that 12th pick?
Yeah, we'll see with Sorber. I think there are, you know, we're going to see, you know, first, get him healthy. Let's get him on the floor and let's see, you know, what it looks like when he is out there. And I think that's, you know, going to be interesting. I think that's one of the things the Thunder have kind of done well is draft and develop, even with these guys that have taken a little bit to get there. And then as far as the draft goes, they're in range to add, you know, if they want to, if he doesn't go off the board early, you could get like an Ademara in there. If he goes earlier than that, because there's a lot of buzz, he could go as high as 8 to a team like Atlanta, then that means probably one of the guards is going to drop. Someone like Mikal Brown Jr., maybe Brayden Burry, Kingston Fleming. And if that happens, then you're in a really good place and you could grab one of those guys. Or even Brayden Burry is someone you could get after there. So that's interesting. And then, you know, there is something he said, do you go with more of a prospect that's going to need time because you don't need someone to step in right away? Could that be like Coapete or Karim Lopez? Like those are guys that could really be, you know, big time prospect kind of guys that they could try to develop up there because those guys are seen as, you know, they're going to take a year or two before they're ready to contribute. So they're going to come away with, you know, somebody good because they do all the time. That's what they do. I do think they're only going to make one of those two picks. I think they'll trade the other one, kind of kick the can down the line, pick up some other, other assets and kind of go that direction. But yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun watching them kind of go out there and put this together.
Keith, we're very optimistic that the Grizzlies will get better out of this draft. But here is the kind of the sobering news. I'm looking at a mock draft site right now, and Brayden Burry's going 9th to the Mavericks, 11th to Golden State, Nate Amint, 12th to Oklahoma City, Yaxel Lindenborg. Other teams are going to get better, too, in the West.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the West has been like this self-sustaining machine because what's happened is they've been so many good teams that aren't really truly bad teams, but they just can't make the playoffs. They get pushed down into the lottery, and then they end up adding more talent, and then we kind of just do the whole cycle all over again. And that's been that way, you know, for a while in the Western Conference, and that's, you know, something where, you know, hopefully maybe the new lottery reform balances that out a little bit where, you know, you're not going to be seeing teams full-on tanking to the bottom and all the like. There's going to, you know, I believe it's going to take us 2 full years of transaction cycles to really understand what that looks like, starting with, you know, this summer with the draft, free agency, and then the trade deadline, and then the same thing next year when the real rules are in place. But it's going to be really interesting to watch all this come together here over the next couple of years and how teams value draft picks and trades and the like. But yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, there's going to be a lot of teams that are going to get tough. I think for the Grizzlies, it's about patience now. It's about, hey, we may not be right back in the playoff picture, but we're building something here around this young core.
Yeah, no doubt about it. While we're talking a lot about the NBA Finals and the draft, there's still some teams out there with head coach openings. The Mavericks, that's the most recent team to have a head coach opening. Where do you think they go from this? You've seen some rumors about maybe, you know, kind of going off the wall with, you know, a college coach, but obviously a lot of really good options out there from the NBA ranks with assistants and other options. Where do you think the Mavericks go with this hire?
It seems like Dallas might be in this kind of, like I just said with Memphis, where this isn't going to be a quick flip. I think a lot of people just assume, all right, well, you got Cooper Flagg, and he's already proven to be really good, and now you've got Kyrie Irving coming back, so we should be a playoff team next season. Well, the playoffs, cracking that group is hard, right? It's hard in both conferences, but it's really hard in the West because some of the bad teams are going to be a lot better next year. Yeah. It seems like Utah is going to be a lot better. So I think you've got to kind of take maybe a little bit of a longer-range approach, and that may mean they are a little more content to go with more of a first-time head coach and less of, all right, we got to get in, guy who's been there, done that, and can lead us. I think we may see Dallas kind of go in a slightly different direction where it is first-time head coach who can grow with Cooper Flagg and whatever the Mavs are building up around him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that is definitely a good idea there. All right, well, before we let you go, do the Spurs turn it around and win game two?
Yeah, I think so. What we've seen out of the Spurs is every time they don't look so great, mm-hmm. and especially when Wembanyama doesn't look so great, they come back and they're awesome the next time out. And I think they're going to win. I think this is going to be a seven-game series. I might be wish-casting a little because I want it to be.
It's okay.
I want every game we can get. But yeah, I think it's going to be a long seven-game series. And I think, it's far from over. So, yeah, I think Spurs are going to get this done in game two.
Yeah, should be a lot of fun. Keith, as always, thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy your weekend. We'll do it again next Thursday.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Keith.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Keith Smith with us every week for Spot Track and the Front Office Show, talking all things NBA and kind enough to be with us year around. Thank you so much to him. He was on our Sissy's Log Cabin guest line, the official jeweler of the hometown NBA team, the Memphis Grizzlies, and at FedEx Forum with the Floor Seat Lounge, also a fabric of the community. And they know their place in the community, and they love reaching out and being part of it, like being a sponsor for the hometown University of Memphis Tigers. The Mid-South's largest selection of one-of-a-kind jewelry, engagement rings, wedding bands, necklaces, those special moments in your life. A lot of people getting married this summer. Also a lot of anniversaries, because this is the time of year everybody had they got married at this time. So keep that in mind this summer for anniversary gifts and for Dad coming up. That 9,000 square foot store in Laurelwood at Poplar and Perkins with expanded lines for Rolex, Cartier, diamonds, and more since 1970, with all the great locations across the Mid-South. Sissy's, they offer a selection of diamonds and estate jewelry and fine gifts. And again, the official jeweler for the Memphis Grizzlies, and at FedEx Forum with the Floor Seat Lounge, where we will be back sooner than you can imagine. Unsurpassed value, exceptional service, expansive selection, and an extraordinary shopping experience, because life's too short for ordinary jewelry.
Well, let's get to another break. When we return, we'll stick with the NBA. We'll dive deep into the draft. Nathan Grubel from No Ceilings, also on social media at Draft Deeper. He joins us next. Talk some of these prospects and what he expects in the draft here in a couple of weeks. We'll do that next on Sports Time.
Start your day with Sports 56 Mornings with Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy. Weekday mornings from 7 to 10, right here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Now back to Sports Time on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour brought to you by Landers Ford in Collierville. Here once again are Brett Norsworthy and Bryant Dacus.
Welcome back in Sports Time. Bryant and Brett with you as we got to talk some more NBA, focus more on the NBA draft. And joining us again, he joined us last week, nice enough to join us again this week, it's Nathan Grubel. He covers the NBA draft. Go follow him on Twitter, X, at Draft Deeper. You can find a lot of his work over with the No Ceilings crew. Nathan, thanks so much for joining us again. Before we get into the draft itself, how'd you enjoy game one of the NBA Finals last night?
Boy, that was just an awesome environment to be able to see and watch. Obviously, the game itself was incredible, but to see San Antonio alive in that way with all of those Spurs fans, loud as can be. You even had some Knicks fans in there who let their cheers be known when the Knicks obviously went on and pulled away and completed that game one, quote-unquote, upset against the Spurs. Obviously, the basketball was good, but that environment, the fans, mm-hmm. everything about it, the pageantry, the scene was probably my favorite part about game one last night.
And once again, we have to be reminded, and I did it early in Western Conference Finals, that the West was deciding the champion, and I even said that the East was the JV. It's not, and we're right here with a team from the East up 1-0.
Absolutely. I mean, when you try and throw those terms out there, a lot of people think about, you know, the Western Conference has all of the biggest names in terms of the All-Stars, and the East might not have some of the same names in terms of cachet and box office, but there's been some good teams out East all season, large part the New York Knicks, who find themselves up 1-0 in the finals. They were a popular preseason pick to go to the finals. They were my preseason pick out of the East to go to the finals. I had OKC on the other side of the bracket. They obviously lost, but the Eastern Conference shouldn't be looked at as, you know, this conference that can't produce an NBA champion. I think the gaps between them and the West are a lot closer than people think. It's just one has cachet, the other has, you know, some deeper teams that rely more on depth and endurance and strength and physicality and just toughing out the other guy.
Mm-hmm. If the Knicks go on and win it, they will be the sixth Eastern team in the 21st century to win it, and would make it 7-6 West. That's anything but domination. And when you're at 7-6,
yeah, no, it absolutely, it definitely is. Nathan, you mentioned the Thunder a second ago. Obviously, a lot of people thought that they would be in the NBA Finals, and I've seen some of the reaction from their fan base, and it feels like they feel like the sky is falling after losing in the Western Conference Finals. But the good thing for them is they've got a couple first-round picks in the NBA draft coming up in a couple of weeks. That number 12 spot, what do you expect? What do you think that the Thunder could do at that spot, and what do you think they could do a couple picks later there at 17?
There's a number of different ways that the OKC Thunder could go, and I could sit here and try to prognosticate what I think is going to happen. But ultimately, you know, OKC does a great job every single year leading up to the draft of keeping everyone's mouth shut and not letting anything leak out of the building in terms of what direction they're going to go. If Sam Presti has had any kind of playbook in terms of what we've seen with when they've had lottery picks in the past, or even multiple lottery picks in the past, that first selection generally tends to be a freshman age player, someone who is younger, who has a developmental runway and can grow within that OKC Thunder system within a few years. I don't know if that player is going to be there for them at 12 in terms of what I think they really need to continue competing in the Western Conference. One of the more popular scenarios at 12 that's been put out there is, well, what if they take 12 and 17, they package a few picks and go up to try to get, you know, the center out of Michigan, Adai Mara. And my response to that was, I'm not quite sure that solves their problem that they're trying to figure out here in terms of Victor Wembanyama. I'm not sure there is an answer for Victor Wembanyama on the face of the earth, to be entirely honest with you. I think you're more so trying to throw a few different bodies out there and trying to schematically throw him off of his game and hope he just misses some shots like he did against the Knicks in game one of the finals. But if I'm trying to go out there and find who I think could be some part of the solution to go up against him in the West, I would look at Adai Mara's teammate, Merez Johnson Jr. out of Michigan, the combo forward / big man, incredible athlete, very strong lower base, strong core, moves his feet really well, can switch all over the floor, but someone who can match up strength-wise with Wembanyama, can certainly knock him off balance a bit, would not be a big man who would be prone to letting Wembanyama get past him off the dribble, to keep him in front of him and really make his life difficult and stonewall him a little bit. That would be the type of guy who I would look at to try and defend, you know, Wembanyama and some of the other talented front court players out there. Someone who may not be 7 foot plus, but who is the type of athletic who can jump and match anyone vertically. Again, he has that strong base to keep hold and keep guys in front of him. And when you do have to put him out on an island or have him cover some space, he can go out and switch on to different perimeter matchups, and none of those guards are going to burn him. He loved doing that at Michigan. Whenever he got the chance to switch out on a guard or a perimeter player, he relished the opportunity and he took advantage of it. So that's the type of guy that I would target if I was OKC.
It sounds like you're warning against maybe teams chasing their tail a little bit in the Wembanyama fascination in this era we've now entered into, of don't make a lot of mistakes doing that. Stay true to your identity as your franchise and just get a good player instead of trying to stop him, because I saw it with people trying to do that with Kareem and often would miss because nobody was stopping him.
1,000%. I'm gonna give a little credit to Jason Timp over at Hoops Tonight in the Volume, and he had a great quote that I was listening to one of his podcasts a few weeks ago about, if you're trying to win an NBA championship, you really have to be able to play and win against four different styles of basketball. Every single team operates differently. So you can try and build your team around one specific matchup, but then what happens if the way that you constructed that team is entirely susceptible to somebody else's game plan and what they're trying to go up against you with? So if I'm building out a championship roster, I'm trying to have multiple answers up and down the lineup. Obviously, there's some core philosophies that you need to stick to in terms of key principles around what your guys do best, but you're also trying to have multiple different answers to a bunch of different problems on the test, not just trying to, you know, maybe skate your way through the multiple choice section of the test and in hopes that, you know, you're going to nail that essay, when in reality, that's only a portion of the test. That's not the entire part of the grade.
Nathan, you mentioned Oklahoma City likes to draft in that freshman class range. Is it freshman? Is it that and age? I wonder who, with first-round picks, have drafted the youngest in age.
Yeah. I mean, there could be several options in that, you know, after the top four, there could be several options in that, you know, 5 to 10 range, where we're talking about guys like, you know, Darius Acuff and Keaton Wadler and Michael Brown Jr., some of these younger guards who play a little bit faster pace. They have room to continue to grow and develop, but they're really good with the ball in their hands. They have, you know, deep shooting range on the three ball. They can score from multiple levels. Those are the types of young guys that you'd find in that portion of the draft. And, you know, OKC has a ton of guards on their roster in particular, but then again, there seem to be the one team that isn't guard averse, and they're more than willing to continue to take some of these perimeter backcourt players, like when they traded for Jared McCain at the trade deadline. They're not shying away from having multiple guys who can handle the ball and offer them different outs, depending, you know, no matter who the ball is kicked around to when the offense breaks down. So, you know, looking at that OKC model and that game plan, if I was some of these other teams in the lottery, I wouldn't shy away from taking a look at some of these guards, and it may not be the quote-unquote answer that everyone's thinking about at the top of their minds, seeing these playoffs and the finals when we're talking about size and strength and front-court versatility. There's some guys you can look for in that range, but I wouldn't shy away from some of the guards who offer some of those longer runways in terms of their youth and what they can bring from an upside standpoint.
How much does 24 years of age hurt Yaxel Lindborg? That's 2 years older than Victor Wembanyama.
It's clearly hurting him, because you're not seeing him mocked anywhere near where I and some other people have him on their big board. I have Yaxel Lindborg as the fifth best pure talent in this entire draft. And again, that's not me saying that on a mock draft I'm putting them at fifth to the LA Clippers. What it is saying is that if the age wasn't the same factor to other people as it appears to be, I think when you're just matching up skill for skill, his dribble, pass, shoot, defense skill set at 6'9" with a 7'3" wingspan is pretty appealing in terms of winning these high leverage games that we continue to see outside of any position that's the non-star, the non-ball dominant star. I think the next most important thing on the court is having one of these four men who doesn't leave anything off the table offensively. He can dribble, pass, shoot, and he can cover ground and defend multiple positions. Anyone who's lining up behind the three-point line nowadays, you have to be able to handle the ball. You have to be able to put the ball on the floor and make some live dribble decisions and also be able to pull up and shoot. If you're not that dynamic of a threat at that power forward position, you're leaving your team in a position where you're potentially playing 4-on-5 on offense. And you know, nowadays, especially with how the modern game has evolved, you can't really be in that spot anymore if you want to win a championship.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I know last week we talked a lot about Cameron Boozer with you. Obviously, a lot of people predicting the Grizzlies will take him at number 3, but we didn't talk as much about the other couple of guys at the top of this draft. So can you break down both A.J. DeBonza and Darren Peterson for us, those two guys? Pretty much everybody thinks we'll go 1 and 2 in this draft.
I would throw my hat in that ring and say I'm projecting the same thing. A.J. DeBonza, you know, measured close enough to 6'10" in shoes at the combine. Great wingspan, awesome athleticism at that jumbo wing initiator position. Can really handle the ball, can play in pick and roll, can operate out of the mid-range, can take guys into the mid-post area, post up some mismatches, score over them in one-on-one, can find guys if they bring the double over, loves attacking, getting downhill, drawing contact to get to the free throw line. He has some questions about more of the ancillary parts to his game as far as, you know, keeping the ball away from too many turnovers in traffic and being able to knock down catch and shoot threes. And what does his defense look like if he has to guard up and down the lineup? Is he going to be good enough an off-the-ball defender to be able to justify being in a defensive position like that at the four spot? Or is he primarily a 3-2 who is much better on the perimeter? You're putting him in one-on-one situations. Is he able to play and pick and roll defensively? All those kinds of things. But if you're projecting a star forward, just in terms of what you're getting out of A.J. DiBonta, he's what a quote-unquote box office star looks like. This big jumbo playmaker who can score over anyone and can really get to the line, draw fouls, and manufacture offense in that way. And then Darren Peterson, you know, 6'4 and a half without shoes, close enough to 6'6 in shoes, got good length, really is one of the best shooting prospects and scoring prospects that we have, not only in this draft, but in several drafts over the last recent years. He is a dynamic shooting threat. Even when you knock him off balance, even when you force him to take a shot you don't want that you want him to, and that he doesn't want to, he'll still knock it in. He is a tough shot maker. I have some questions about how he handles himself in terms of primarily operating more on the ball, creating for others, playing out of pick and roll to pass and not just to score. I have some off-ball defensive questions with him as well, but I think Darren Peterson in particular would be a great choice for Utah at the number two pick, because if I'm talking about a guy who I have some questions about him, how he handles the ball and operates on the ball, Utah is not a very ball screen heavy offense. They ran the third fewest pick and roll possessions last season per synergy. Coach Will Hardy finds ways to get guys the ball and put them in advantages where they are primarily catch and shoot or make quick decisions once they catch the ball. So I think that'd be a great fit for him. I think AJ would do well in Washington. I can talk like I did last week about how I have Cameron Boozer at the top of my board, but sometimes these things work out well for a reason. Sometimes guys just go where they're supposed to go. Mm.
A lot of Arkansas fans in our listening audience. How early is too early for Malik Thomas?
Oh, that's a great question. I think a lot of mocks have had him, you know, that late first round range, maybe even early second round territory, but you know, I kind of look around at where that late first round is sitting, and you look at another one of these guys who is still young, certainly young compared to a lot of the other seniors that you're projecting in that range. He'll be 20 during his NBA rookie season, but he's another one of these guys who's young in terms of experience on the ball. Didn't really have a lot of on-ball reps at Arkansas this year. Darius Acuff was the primary and lead playmaker for that team, and rightfully so. He did an awesome job at it, but Malik's an awesome shooter. He's able to get his shot off in a variety of different ways, off the catch, off the dribble, off movement. And that's going to be a key skill for him in terms of shooting that three ball that's going to be able to get him on an NBA floor to help develop and round out the rest of those skills. And Malik is good size, good length for someone who you would project to be more of a quote-unquote point guard or in a combo guard position. And if more of those things come together for Malik, if he's able to adequately score from all three levels, if he does become a better passer in those pick and roll situations and some of those secondary creation opportunities, and he's able to hold his own defensively in the backcourt, you're probably talking about a guy who should go inside the top 20 and not someone who should go closer to the second round. So I don't think it's out of the question that maybe a team like the Toronto Raptors, they're looking around at some of the other guards available and they talk themselves into, well, wait a second, Malik, maybe we didn't expect him to be in this draft, but all of a sudden he is, and maybe he has more upside than some of these other older guards or other, you know, senior-level players that we're looking at. Maybe we should bring in someone like Malik Thomas.
Yeah, I don't hate that at all. Last thing for you, Nathan. Jaden Quaintance, the big man out of Kentucky, didn't see him really at all last year for the Wildcats, but the season before, his freshman season at Arizona State, some concern about that leg. What do you make of him as a prospect, and how much concern do you have about those injuries?
I think the injuries are definitely a concern, and I'm not going to have full information on the medicals. Being someone in my position, I will at some point certainly acquire some intel about where I believe that stands, but it's not going to be anything I know right away and I'm able to share now. But, you know, without knowing that information, it makes it makes it hard for someone like me to project where I should have him, you know, on a board and in a mock draft, because why would a team want to draft someone very, very high who has legitimate questions at the center position with both of their knees and suffering multiple lower body injuries? That doesn't seem to be a recipe for success if I'm projecting that out. What I would say is, because of his overall talent, because of what he was able to show when he was healthy at Arizona State and in lower levels in high school, I think he is someone who you could see a team with multiple first-round picks take a swing on. We did talk about OKC with 12 and 17. We can talk about Chicago, who has not only the fourth pick, but the 15th pick. We can talk about Charlotte, who has the 14th and the 18th picks. I think it would be, and obviously Memphis with the third and the 16th picks. I think it would be a team like that who has multiple bites at the apple. They have a high enough lottery pick to where they're drafting with some level, or in the case of, you know, a Chicago or Memphis, a fairly full level of confidence. They're getting an impact player with that first pick. Why not take a legitimate upside swing with that second first rounder and try to strike gold with a center who, if everything comes together for him and he's able to stay healthy, could be one of the most dynamic defensive players in this draft, has shown a little bit of upside handling the ball, passing for others, and could really be one of these Bam Adebayo-like centers who can switch all over the floor and can just give you so much utility on the defensive end. Why not take a swing like that if you have multiple first-round picks?
Absolutely. He's certainly an intriguing prospect. Nathan, this has been a blast. Both times we've had you on has been so much fun. Obviously, we're getting closer, only a couple weeks from the draft. Tell people where they can find more of your content as we get closer to draft day.
Well, you can find me on Twitter at DraftDeeper, but I'll take the few seconds I have left and plug the No Ceilings Collective as a whole. I want to make sure that we get a word out about our draft guide that we're going to be releasing tomorrow. You can find all information on that at NoCeilingsNBA.com. It's the one premium product we offer every single draft cycle. We'll have 100 draft profiles available in that guide, and every single player gets the same amount of coverage, whether they're the first player in the guide or the last player in the guide. 100 full profiles will get you ready for everything you need to know for the draft. Check that out, NoCeilingsNBA.com.
Love it. I know that one's going to be great. Y'all do great work over there at No Ceilings. Thanks again for joining us. Enjoy your weekend, and we'll definitely do this again soon.
Absolutely, guys. Whatever you need me, just give me a holler.
Thanks, Nathan. Nathan Grubel from No Ceilings. You can go follow him on social media at Draft Deeper. He is pumping out the content as we get closer to draft day. And like you said, I did not know about the draft guide that is coming out tomorrow. But if you know anything, if you really keep up at all with the NBA draft, you know about No Ceilings, the work that they do over there. So I'm sure it is going to be great content with that draft guide coming out tomorrow. But let's go ahead and get to another break, and when we return, it'll be time for Big Number of the Day.
Join the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin, for Wolo and Friends. Weekday mornings from 10 to 11 here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
And 98.5 FM. This hour brought to you by Landers Ford in Collierville. Here once again are Brett Norsworthy and Bryant Dacus. And she says, I wish that I could.
Big Daddy.
Hello, Big Brand.
It's a guy, he wants to be big, then he gets big, he doesn't want to be big anymore, then he gets small, but the suit's too big.
Big Daddy.
The big boy.
You're a big guy.
I think she's trying to pull a fast one on Big Daddy.
The big number of the day.
Well, Brett, my big number today is the number 13, and it comes from last night's game one between the Spurs and the Knicks. Victor Wembanyama had 13 shot attempts against Karl Anthony Towns. He was 2 for 11, had 9 points, a lot of that at the free throw line against Karl Anthony Towns, and turned the ball over 5 times. Karl Anthony Towns did a phenomenal job against Victor Wembanyama last night. We'll see if that can continue. It feels like a tough ask for anybody, certainly a tough ask for Karl Anthony Towns, but at least in game one, Cat got the better of Victor.
We're close on big number. My big number is the number 10, and that was Dylan Harper. His 10 points, and that was the most by a rookie in the NBA Finals in a first quarter, playing in their very first finals since the merger in 76. Ricky Sobers had 8 in 76 for Phoenix against Boston, in an epic classic six game. It was only six games, but it was great. And also 8 points by Kurt Rambis in 1982 from Santa Clara, the second best player ever from Santa Clara. We know Steve Nash is the first.
Mm. Yeah.
Here's a Santa Clara player in the draft, too, this year.
Yeah, Alan Graves.
That's it.
Yeah, he's a good player, and we know J-Dub with OKC from Santa Clara, so a lot of Santa Clara flavor out there across the NBA.
All right, Brian, it's usually around NC tournament time. Uh-huh. True or false, Santa Clara's been to a Final Four.
True.
Very true.
Yes.
Very true.
I knew that one.
You got that one down.
I know that
one. Landon, you had it too, didn't you?
Yeah. I was getting ready to say
that's
true.
That's right, yeah.
No, way back machine.
Yeah, no, it's going way, way, way back, but they've pumped out some good players out of Santa Clara. But you mentioned Dylan Harper. He was really impressive last night.
Why'd they move away from him late in the game?
It's a good question. You know, a lot of people pointing to the fourth quarter and, you know, choosing De'Aaron Fox, who really struggled over Dylan Harper, but you know that big spark that he gave them in the first quarter was huge. You mentioned that 10 points. Do you know what his over under was for points last night?
I don't.
10.5. So he almost passed it in the first quarter. Very easy if you had the over 10.5 for Dylan Harper last night with that 16 points. But now he was a nice spark off the bench early.
Did you have it?
I bumped it up to have him over 12.5 points. So we made it a little bit better odds and got some more money out of it. But yeah, no, that seemed like free money when you saw it at 10.5. But you know, it's a good question of why go away from him after he was so good. But you know, you look at what he did in the second half when he played. You know, a little hesitant at times, 2 for 5 from the field, 0 for 2 in that second half. So maybe thinking that hey, hot start out there, but really kind of struggling. And then kind of what he allows defensively can be an issue at times. And so you know, maybe thinking hey, let's go with the older guy, the veteran, who maybe the shot's not falling, but he can maybe give us a little bit more in other areas instead of going with the rookie.
And the win for New York really gets, I think, everybody even more of a fever pitch looking forward to next week.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I know. It's gonna be wild. You know, you're already seeing some of the pictures and videos from last night in New York of people watching the game and celebrating. And so, yeah, you know, and certainly if they can get another win in Game 2, but even without a win in Game 2, it's going to be madness once we get it to New York City. That fan base, they're already crazy. They'll be even wilder when they're hosting an NBA Finals game. So really looking forward to those sights and sounds from that.
Security lines, 2 hours to get in next week?
Probably more than that. Now with the news that the president will be at Game 3. So, you know, you're talking big-time security for that game and certainly for all the other games that will be top-notch. I'm sure everybody getting the talk today after the fan last night on the court of, hey, we gotta be more on our P's and Q's down there at the court level.
Yeah, that probably sent Madison Square Garden into double practice next week. Where will it have, they probably won't, but in a seat or in a box for the president?
Oh, I'd say a box. I haven't seen anything. I know Shams Charania reported it about an hour ago that he was going to be in attendance, I believe, for Game 3, but I did not see anything on where he's going to be sitting. But I would assume a box. Get it up there and get the bulletproof glass all set up for him.
President Clinton, for the Arkansas Final Four games in 94 in Charlotte, was in a box. At the regional final in Dallas, I mean, he was like fourth row, mid-court now.
Just hanging out with everybody.
The two rows behind him and two rows in front of him. You weren't
Nobody.
Messing with him.
Absolutely not. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what that looks like for Game 3 at MSG. But let's go ahead and wrap up the second hour, get to a break. And when we return, we talked about it earlier, really interesting question of all the big sporting events, playoffs, everything like that. Which would you keep? Which would you cut? We'll go through that list, make our picks next on Sports Time.